Welcome back to the Greater Greener Georgia podcast, where we dive into the environmental challenges and solutions shaping our future. Today, we are speaking with Eric Allen about his candidacy for Cobb County Commissioner and his past role as a state representative and his stance on environmental issues. Thank you for coming and joining
us
today.
Thank you for having me.
So I always start the podcast episodes off with something fun, something so people can just get to kind of know you as a person. So what is your favorite thing to do in your district, or small business to support, or place to eat? What is it?
Oh, man, that's a lot of stuff in one question. Let's see. Favorite thing to do right now is I'm a soccer dad. My daughter is into soccer, so a lot of my schedule revolves around different parks and playing soccer, but we love to eat. I think favorite breakfast spot in Cobb, kind of right around the corner from my house, is Grits and Eggs. Good spot. You should try it out. It's one on Windy Hill and one over by Cumberland Mall.
What do you get?
You know, the beignets, best ones in Atlanta, so go check them out.
I'm trying to watch my carbs.
Oh, no, you go there, you got a carb up. Carb, sugar, coffee, it's all good. But so just like, you know, hanging out with the family, hanging around the neighborhood, and that's about it.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. Well, we'll get right into it. So you previously served as the state representative for Georgia's 4th District. How has that experience shaped your decision to run for county commissioner in Cobb? And then what lessons will you bring from the Capitol into the local government?
You know, the biggest lesson I learned is people think about the state legislature and they try to narrow the job down to like the red and the green button. You know, what are you voting for? But there are so many other opportunities to serve in the legislature. You know, constituent outreach is probably the most rewarding part of that job. And I learned real quick that in between those votes, you know, really being a Sherpa for government, helping people get to services. The only reason government exists, in my opinion, is to deliver services. And you need someone sometimes to help guide you through that local and even federal process. So that was really rewarding. So when I looked at this opportunity, you know, after leaving the House to run for a local office, this is really as close as you can get to the people. So a lot of the things that I was working on at the state level are now going to translate into the local level. You know, even on some of the environmental issues with Sterigenics, trying to get that, you know, plant closed in Cobb County. That's, you know, we've done what we could at the state, passed some legislation to make it better. But now, what do we do at the local level to finish the job? So I think there's a lot you learn at the state level, especially partnering with state agencies and the federal agencies in order to get things done, because most of it is local and federal and state partnerships. You know, if there's a road or something we want to get done, you know, transit-wise, we work with Georgia DOT, we work with the Federal Department of Transit, and we work at the county level. So it's really bringing all three levels of government together and understanding of how they all coexist and cooperate makes a difference.
It does, and I bet the thing is like seeing all that you can do at the top level and then having all this knowledge to be like, okay, this is what I actually can do in this local seat.
Knowledge and relationships.
Absolutely.
You know, relationships matter. And when you're able to pick up the phone, I mean, I tell people all the time, you can, you know, I may have left office, but they didn't clear out my Rolodex when they did it. So I still have relationships that I can leverage as we move forward with the county. So I think it's exciting. I'm excited about it. And I think being in this office, I'd be able to make even a greater impact to the residents of Cobb County.
Absolutely. And so Cobb County is rapidly growing. We see so much growth in a lot of our metro Atlanta areas for sure. It's in a diverse area. What is your vision for the future and how do you plan to address the biggest challenges facing residents today?
So, you know, when you talk about Cobb growing, I tell people this to paint an image because I travel a lot and I'm flying. And when I fly into Atlanta, I see five distinct skylines: downtown, midtown, Buckhead, perimeter, and Cumberland. When you think about Cobb, it's now the fifth skyline of Atlanta, of metro Atlanta. So there's a lot of growth, but it's also a lot of opportunity. And with those opportunities, also a lot of challenges. So I'm not naive in my thinking. I know that as we continue to grow, there are going to be more and more challenges. We're no longer a suburban, exurban county. We're an urban, suburban, exurban county. We've got all three in one space with 800,000 voters. So there are going to be challenges. We're also not monolithic. Things that are going to work well in South Cobb are not going to work well in West Cobb. So I think there are going to be a lot of challenges. So I'm not naive to that, but I look forward to tackling them and making sure that we continue to grow in a responsible and collaborative way so that we don't have unnecessary challenges pop up as we do this development.
Awesome. So Georgia is seeing increasing threats from extreme weather, heat waves, and flooding. What steps would you take as commissioner to strengthen Cobb County's climate resilience and protection, to protect vulnerable communities?
Yeah, resiliency and sustainability are two big words, two important words. We have to be resilient. We have to make sure that as we develop, we don't develop to a point where we don't have natural runoff lanes. You know, water is a problem. You think about flooding, it's not just you know, what comes up from the river, but it's what's not able to get to the river and is ponding in neighborhoods and such. So really have to be thinking about, you know, what do we do for the resiliency piece to make sure that as we develop, we don't also ruin the natural ecosystems that we have in place. You also have to make sure we're doing things to be sustainable. Let's reduce what we're sending to the landfill. Let's make sure we're encouraging our environment to thrive, air, land, and soil, and water. To make sure that we're not polluting it, diluting it, creating more issues than what it's worth. So it's really a resiliency and a sustainability conversation we have to have at the same time.
Absolutely. And the 100% campaign, which is something that was kind of, we were doing here at GCV as well. There are other 100%s happening, but GCV has a 100% campaign. We are working to push municipalities towards 100% clean energy here in Georgia by 2050. And counties like Athens, Clark, Savannah, City of Atlanta, they all have clean energy plans by 2030, 2040, 2050. Would you support a similar resolution in Cobb County? If so, what concrete policies would you advocate for to transition to clean energy?
You know, the concrete policy I would advocate for is for us to come up with a plan. I mean, that's the yes. First step is that we got to have a plan. I mean, right now, I don't think we have that in place or in motion even. So it's coming up with a plan. But it's also looking at things we can do in the interim. You know, moving buses to clean gas.
Right.
You know, looking at our fleet. You know, for making them electric. Mm-hmm. You know, there are things that I think we could do in the interim that are a lot more viable in a county like Cobb. Than us because we have the infrastructure to do some of these things. So I think the first thing policy-wise is to come up with a plan. And then to start executing on that and making decisions, you know, based as we start to increase our fleet in certain things. Well, what can we do that's electric? What can we do that's on natural gas? What can we do in other ways? So, yeah, I think it's putting the plan in place and then starting to execute it.
Awesome. And so you spoke about Sturgeonix a few minutes ago, and we know that Cobb has faced issues with air and water pollution and then plant industrial emissions. So what is your stance on environmental regulation, and how would you work to ensure cleaner air and water for the residents?
Even though I'm out of the legislature, I still would like to see the other two pieces of legislation that I was working on years ago. You know, having someone carry those concepts. It doesn't have to be the same language, but I think it's still concepts of making sure that we are reducing the amount of emissions at the Sturgeonix plant and making sure that it is safe and that they are transparent in explaining or disclosing what leaks, you know, the fugitive emissions. So I'd like to see that continue, but I also think the county has an expanded role in where we locate certain things. You know, I always talk about with the three levels of government. You know, the federal government regulates, mm-hmm. The state government looks at how they operate, in the EPD, but then the cities and the counties are permitting them where they locate.
Right.
And I think we have an opportunity to really look at our high hazard permitting process to make sure that we're not bringing more of those polluters into the area. Even right now, it's on the table to discuss the biosolids from the water treatment facility in Cobb, the R.L. Sutton, which is right across the river from Fulton, where they're also having incinerators to incinerate biofuels. So you think about that triangle that we'd have. We'd have coal ash on one side, we'd have ethylene oxide on the other, and now possibly PFAS and mercury levels increasing because of biosolids. So there's a lot of conversation we need to continue to have to make sure we're keeping our community safe. Mm-hmm. So it's not just Sterigenics, it's a lot of different things that are popping up. And as we continue to grow, once again, that's just one of those challenges with growth that we have to address all of these issues in some way. I see the Sterigenics issue completely different than the biosolids in the stance that we as a county have to find something to do with our waste, our solid waste. Mm-hmm. We don't have to allow, we have no obligation to allow a private company to pollute our citizens just because they want to do business. It's two different issues.
Right.
And I think we have to separate those and attack them, you know, with the same vigor to make sure that we're creating a safe, once again, air, water, land, all needs to be safe for our residents.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of happening around Georgia. I mean, you have the biolabs that happened in Conyers, which was a horrible situation, something that happened many times before, and this was the final straw that broke the camel's back. What a way to break a camel. I'm a citizen of Conyers, so that was a big thing. So I think a lot of people are really pushing in on what are our local electeds and our big electeds, what are we doing towards these companies who are coming into our communities?
Well, and to that point, I think we can't let the moment pass about what's going on right now, because we know that the federal government is going to weaken all the standards around all of this with regulation. If the EPA will exist in a completely different capacity in the next 6 months than it has in the last 60 years. So we got to be vigilant about that. We also have a very feckless EPD. I mean, nobody thinks the Georgia Environmental Protection Division is doing a great job. You know, they're jokingly the environmental, you know, I don't know what they are, permitting division. I mean, all they do is worry about the permits and they walk away. They don't really hold accountable. So there's opportunities in this to make sure that we are vigilant, the federal and the state level, not just at the local level, because it all interplays together. And it's very little we can do at the local level if these companies are being run amok and allowed to run amok at the federal and the state level. Yeah, so.
Public transportation plays a key role in reducing carbon emissions. How do you see transit expansion fitting into your plans for Cobb County? And what improvements would you prioritize?
I think even though the SPLOST failed in November, there's still an opportunity. Well, it's sad, but I think there are reasons why.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to ask people to support a 30-year SPLOST. One of the things I told people during that campaign was my daughter is 9 years old.
Right.
By voting for that SPLOST, I'm basically putting a tax on her until she's 40. Think about that.
Yeah,
that's a big commitment.
Right.
So I think there are ways to come back at this with a more targeted approach, with better marketing and messaging, helping people understand the why. You know, why is this important?
Yeah.
You know, why is this going to benefit everyone in Cobb? To your point, you know, you're lowering emissions, you're reducing flow on roads. You are, you know, for business community, you now have access to the best talent in the region, not just the ones that can happen to make it to your facility Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. So it's a broader conversation we can have. But mobility, and I use the word mobility over transit because it's all modes.
Yeah.
We, you know, the bike, trail, autonomous. All of these different things need to come together to help people move around the county and even to the city, to Atlanta or to the airport or wherever else. People need to be able to move to and fro as frictionless as possible while keeping environmental impacts down as well. So,
yeah, I think the SPLOST GCV played a huge part in helping to advocate and be on the ground for that. So there were two transits that we did for Cobb, and then the other one was for. So both of those SPLOST
this time, there's an opportunity.
It's a building. It's the time to build, and I think getting people more comfortable with seeing that transit is good for the area and giving everybody, because everybody can benefit from it. You know, not having to get into your car to go to the grocery store, if you want to just drop by the mall, and you can just kind of just take public transportation for a cheaper rate than what your gas is, and, you know, come back and forth and not have to have the stress of driving or sitting in Atlanta traffic, which exists very much in Cobb.
Well, you know, and something that I think goes missed, I mean, with my full-time job, I spend a lot of times in different cities, counties, you know, learning. And I was with a client on the West Coast a couple of months ago, and we were kind of talking about the transit thing. And the thing that they brought up that I think was missing from our conversation is there's this the belief that people in the South just love their cars. But if you look at ridership of Uber and other shared, They may not be taking the bus. They may not be taking a train. But they're taking other modes of transportation. Yeah. And so it's not as far-fetched of a concept. We've just got to now help people see, don't you like taking alternative modes of transit?
Right.
You know, what if it wasn't a bird, you weren't on a scooter, or you weren't, you know, summoning in an Uber, you were using an app that summoned a ride share that the city or the county provided. So I think once again, we just have to re-message and rebrand that. To get people to understand what we're trying to do is not necessarily unfamiliar. It's just packaged in a different way.
It's the same concept. Like when I was out knocking doors and telling people, you know, vote for the transit, say yes to the SPLOS. And I was like, oh, it's like you can do an Uber, but it'll be like from the county. So, and, you know, and people thought that was cool. They're like, I like that. Yeah. And then if you're not going to charge Uber prices, you can charge cop prices, which are would at much lesser cost. So moving along into kind of your leadership and all of the things there. During your time in the Georgia House, you worked on a variety of legislative issues. Can you share a specific policy or initiative you championed that you believe had a lasting impact?
Yeah, the one I talk about the most, and people, if you've heard this before, I'm sorry, but I think it's the most exciting thing that I did while I was in the legislature. But there's a license plate that's out there that I got passed that says Georgia Recovers. It's for the recovery community from addiction, alcohol substance use disorders. And, you know, people will say, well, why is that? You know, why was that so important? Because that's a community that needed to be seen. Mm-hmm. And the pride that members of that community have by getting that license plate and connecting with others and being praised for their recovery journey.
Yeah.
But being seen for it as well is important. Yeah. And I think that that was an issue I was happy to work on. I'm most proud of it. Also, the things I did with Sterigenics, and environment, those were, you know, up there too. But helping a marginalized or a population that's typically not seen in a way that's not stigma-driven, to break that stigma and give them something to be visible and proud of was a major accomplishment. And I was able to get that passed unanimously in my freshman session in the minority. So that's also something I'm very proud of too, the maneuvering around it. There was a lot of maneuvering around it, and was able to attach that language to a bill for a veteran's license plate and kind of go through. But it was, to me, it's a testament of leadership and building bridges, not burning bridges, but and getting something done that will have a lasting impact. I had someone email me a couple of days ago that their son got their first car. And they had a picture with their Georgia Recovers license plate because their parents were in the recovery movement, but they were able to honor their parents by showing that. So they sent me a picture of it. And that's a lasting impact. That's something that every time, you know, we drive around and we see one and tell my daughter, you know, we did that.
That's amazing. And I think that's all, like, just going back to being public servants and being servants. And that truly is seeing communities that are not truly always seen or always put at the forefront, and like seeing that need, and it's something so small as a license plate that's impacting the lives and helping other people be proud of their recovery.
Yeah.
You know,
and we're all recovering from something. Yeah. I mean, we are all recovering from something. So anyway, but it doesn't have to be just because of substance use disorders, anything else. Right. Just showing that support of understanding. We even as a community. Have not always embraced mental health and caring for the whole body the way we should. That should be a symbol to. So anyway, that's one of the things I'm most proud of.
I love that. That you taught me something new. I would have never known that. I love that I know that fact. I'm like, yeah, that's what.
When you order your specialty license plate, anybody out there, when you order your specialty license plate, you have a chance to order the Georgia Recovers license plate, and half of what you pay for your plate will go toward the Georgia Council of Recovery and the Mental Health America Georgia Mental Health Consumer Network. So.
You can't beat that. That's lasting. That is a lasting impact. I love that. So county leadership plays a crucial role in zoning and land use. So how would you balance economic development with sustainability and protecting green spaces in Cobb?
By being all inclusive. And what I mean by that is when, you know, developers want to develop, they want to be part of the community, they want to do it. We bring the community in, we bring the developers in. And as we start to develop the parts of Cobb County, the parts of District 2 that need to be either developed or redeveloped, reimagined, let's do it with all phases in mind. Let's talk about green space trails. Let's talk about infrastructure, transit, mobility, so that the developers can incorporate that into
their plans.
Into their planning.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I see a lot of things in other areas, and there's another county that I do work with, and they've started to ask developers to build in transit stops in covered areas within a mixed-use development. So just think, just something that small, saying, look, we think this is a great development, but how are you going to support Cobb Transit in this? Well, we can build a transfer station, or we could do that. You know, this could be part of that. We could have trails that go from this development connecting to the Silver Comet, connecting to the Beltline. Those are the kind of things. So by being inclusive in our imagination of what development looks like, I think we can solve multiple problems without it always being on the backs of the taxpayers, but letting those that help develop fully. You know, not just in buildings, but also in infrastructure.
I think that's awesome. What is your stance on environmental justice, and how would you work to ensure that all communities in Cobb County, especially low-income and minority neighborhoods, have equal access to clean air, safe water, and green spaces?
You know, we've got to be very cautious in Cobb of not to continue to over-pollute or take already marginalized communities and just dump on them.
Right.
You know, that's a common practice. There's, you know, you start to notice, or certain parts of a county or a city are known for this type of thing. I think we got to rebrand that. There's some areas of Cobb that are branded as very industrial, but they're also, you know, less than an eighth of a mile away from residential centers or schools or daycare centers or churches. So we just have to be very intentional. I think that that is the one of the biggest civil rights challenges of our time is environmental justice. Just like all of the other, you know, justice issues, I think you've got education justice, you've got health justice, you've got, I mean, all these different things, but environmental justice is one of the largest of our times, because as we grow, there are just more dangers introduced into our day-to-day environments. And we've got to be very mindful of how we do that. Once again, the county has a very strong, outweighted responsibility to dictate where these things locate. And that's where it takes bringing the community together, working on master planning to make sure we've got a vision of where these areas are. They have to go somewhere. And you can't have the not in my backyard mentality, but you can have, it's gonna be safe, and it's gonna be in these confined spaces. And that's what we're going to designate for, so that we know where our green space is going to be, but we also know where our industrial base is going to be.
Right, because I think a lot of times many people run into the marginalized communities are usually the ones that suffer from, you know, okay, developers want to come in, they want to buy up their homes, or just whatever might happen. It's usually happening to those marginalized lower income areas. And then the people who are, you know, I'll call them the fat cats, or more people that are more well off, or they live in a different area where, you know, you're not coming in our, like, they know, you know, you can't come into these neighborhoods because it's already kind of maybe what you think Cobb should look like. And now we're going to gentrify this other side of town, or make it into what we think it should be. And then it knocks out an entire group of people who, you know, deserve to have access to the nice things, no matter if they live on the higher end of town or they live in a side of town that has a lower income. So I think
one
that's
of the things, and that's you just said a whole lot of really, really good stuff.
Yeah.
I just want to double click on it for a
absolutely.
Second, because one of the things that the root of all that is engagement. And you have some communities that are hyper engaged, and when they even hear of something that's not what they want, they jump into action. The challenge is making sure those communities who have not been traditionally given a voice feel empowered to speak up, and that they have someone listening.
Right.
That is a big thing. So make sure their engagement. Engagement is two ways. A lot of these communities are speaking, just no one's listening. So you've got to have that full communication. The other thing I just want to say is there's a distinct difference between reinvestment and gentrification.
Yeah, true.
Gentrification means you're developing and you're redeveloping an area with no intent of the current population of being able to stay there.
Right.
Reinvestment means I want this community to be better for the people who have existed here for generations.
Right.
We need more reinvestment and less gentrification.
Which is happening all
over the place.
Around,
it's a natural phenomenon, but if you do it the right way, where investment And I think there's some areas of the Beltline that were successful in this in a way, is you reinvest in certain areas for people to stay there. But as the property values expand and go up, now you've got those people that have been there for generations able to sell off when they're ready. And now they're able to reap the rewards. Right. Whereas gentrification is coming and just pricing everybody out.
Yeah, just you have to sell.
You can't afford it anymore. Yeah. So there's a fine line between the two, but I think there's a difference between reinvestment and gentrification, and we need more of these communities to be reinvested in and not gentrified.
I love that, reinvestment instead of gentrification. I love that. So for voters who care deeply about climate action, clean energy, and sustainability, why should they support your campaign, and what sets you apart from other candidates in the race?
Well, I have a track record, and I've been a champion of our environment for years, and I think it's a values thing. It's not an issues. We know in this crazy time, issues come and go and they pop up. What are your values? And I can tell voters, I am steadfast in my values to make sure that we not only continue to grow, but we grow responsibly, that we focus on sustainability, that we put pressure on corporate polluters that are already here, but we also stop new ones from coming in. So I think that's a huge difference between me and anyone else in this race, no matter what side of the aisle they're on, is having a track record and having that trust that no matter what the issue of the day, Eric has the values to protect us and to speak out for what we know is wrong.
Absolutely. I love that. So I want to just thank you for coming on the podcast today. We've had a great time talking to you and just breaking down all the things in Cobb. I'm going to have you look at the camera and tell people early voting is happening now. Get out the vote.
Yeah. We are in the middle of early voting right now. It ends on Friday. So Friday, March 7th is the last day, but Election Day is March 11th. So if you know anyone in Cobb County that's in District 2, basically stretching straight up the county from South Cobb Drive and 285 up 75 to Kennesaw. So literally right up the spine of Cobb County. Awesome district, but have them come out and vote for Eric Allen for County Commission.